guitar people, welcome to Have Guitar Will Travel, presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine. With your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with singer-songwriters and guitarists Tom Paxton and John McCutcheon, who is also a multi-instrumentalist. In our conversation, I start with Tom, and he tells us about his home in Alexandria, Virginia, right across the river from Washington, D.C. And he tells us about starting on trumpet before starting a guitar as a senior in high school. The two tell us about when they first met in Boston in the early 80s and how they came together as songwriting partners during COVID. John describes recording their album Together Again in the same room with the exception of Stuart Duncan on fiddle, and Together Again being their second collaboration after their first Together. John discusses his instruments on the album and Ohm banjo and Huston Dalton guitars, and Tom tells us about his Martin M38 that he has at home. Tom talks about why he retired from touring, and John tells us about his upcoming tour plans, and the two tell us about their writing projects. The two discuss their holiday traditions, Tom renting a Virginia ski cabin, and John with a huge Cuban Christmas Eve feast. And the two have a tradition of writing unconventional Christmas songs. You can find out all you want to know about John at his website, folkmusic.com. That's folkmusic.com. And for more information on Tom, you can go to his website at tompaxton.com. That's TOMPAXTON.com. Please like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players and banjo players. Here's John and Tom.
Hey there. How are you, Tom?
Hey.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Tom.
Is this the first time we've met?
I think this is the first time we've met, yeah.
Well, in this lifetime.
In this lifetime, yeah.
Yeah.
I like the tree in the background. That makes it very...
It's nice, isn't it?
It makes it a holiday-ish.
It's an artificial tree. We gave in to them about 5 or 6 years ago, and we've never turned back. It works beautifully.
Yeah. Whereabouts are you located?
I'm in Alexandria, Virginia.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm about 300 yards from the Potomac.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. How long have you been there?
We've been here in Alexandria since, 25 years, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Okay. We've been in this house about 20 years.
Okay. Is it a new house or an old house?
No, it was built in 85.
Okay.
It's a townhouse on the roof of a big garage across from the old torpedo factory, which is now an art center, which is perfect. Perfect metaphor.
Yes.
Swords into plowshares.
And,
it's like you don't even know it's here if you're walking along in the street down below. It's there's a whole village of townhouses up here on the roof, and it's nice and quiet.
Yeah,
it's lovely, and we're just a half a block from where a whole bunch of restaurants and everything are. And there's stuff along the waterfront. It's
sure.
Really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How far are you from Washington, D.C.?
About 3 miles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. From my third floor window, I can see the Capitol.
Okay.
In the background. Yeah.
Wow. And how's the
weather? And where are you?
I'm in Napa, California.
Napa?
Yeah.
Is that up... in the Bay Area?
Yeah, it's just north of San Francisco, about 45
okay.
or an hour north of San
Francisco. Okay. I can't believe how big that state is.
to do with that.
It's about 700 miles from tip to tip, is it?
That is correct, yeah.
Wow, that's as big as British Isles.
Yeah, it's, it's a great state. But
I love it there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How's the weather in Virginia today?
It's going in various directions. I think it's heading for clouds now. I think we got rain forecast and maybe snow.
Uh-huh. Is the summer basically your rainy season more than the winter?
I don't know.
When did you start playing guitar?
I started playing guitar when I was, a senior in high school, junior in high school.
Okay.
I started out, I played trumpet in the high school marching band.
Okay.
And I loved that.
Sure.
And then I heard someone playing ukulele, so I got a ukulele.
Okay.
And then someone sat on my ukulele, and that was aloha.
Yeah. Nice to see you again, John.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
I'm sure you're amazed to see me here before you.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Tom, and nice to see you again, John. When did the two of you first meet?
In outside of Boston. We did a concert together for Harry, Lipson. Yeah. And that was God knows when.
And he ain't talking. that was the early 80s.
Okay.
And and then we kept inventing ways to see one another from time to time, and then the pandemic came, and in an effort to combat loneliness and isolation and maybe write a few songs, we thought, hey, let's try writing together. And it turned out to be obviously a really good medium for doing it.
Sure.
Oh, it's perfect.
Had you guys written songs together before the pandemic?
We wrote one song. We were in a car in England somewhere. And I don't know why we never sang that song. It was, someone's been telling me lies.
Lies, surprise, surprise. Surprise. Couldn't believe my eyes.
Yeah, couldn't believe my ears.
I never would have dreamt it in years. And it was during the Anita Hill hearings, I remember.
Oh yeah.
And Bill Clinton made an appearance, and George H.W. Bush made an appearance, and it was fun. We quoted one of our greatest political philosophers, Gomer Pyle. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
You know what was wrong with that song? The chorus was too long.
It was a long chorus, and it changed every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we know that now, because we're so much better.
We should rewrite it.
Okay, next Monday, you and me.
Sure.
When you guys recorded the first, you know, together, when you recorded together in 23, were you guys all in the same room, or did you do it remotely as well?
Oh, we were mostly in the same room.
All right, right on.
Yeah, yeah, it was right at the point at which we could do that.
Okay, yeah, sure.
And I had done two albums. I'd actually done three pandemic era albums before that, and the second and the third were both done with everybody in their own little studios, and then the real magician was the engineer who made it sound like we were all together.
Yes, of course.
But yeah, the first the together we were all in the same room.
Excellent. And how about for this album?
Same thing.
Okay.
Very yeah. Nice.
And who's playing the fiddle?
Stuart Duncan. He's the fiddler of the gods.
Captain Fiddle.
Yeah. And I went to, the first album, we both went to Nashville to work with Stuart. I mean, Stuart was the one person on this second project that was not in the same room. I went to Nashville and recorded him there. He is the most in-demand fiddle player in Nashville.
Certainly.
And just catching him at home is a trick.
Yeah. And played with Emmylou Harris famously for quite a while.
Yeah. And is out with, you know, Alison Krauss and Robert Plant.
Yeah.
Went out with Diana Krall, been out with Alan Jackson and George Strait. And
he was on the first two albums I did with Jim Rooney. down in Nashville.
Wow.
Back in the 90s.
He was a mere kid then.
Sure. And the pedal steel player, who's that?
Steve Henson was his name, and he was a fellow that I think Tim O'Brien turned me on to him.
Sure.
We had a revolving door. We had a guy named Chris Scruggs who was going to do it at first, and then he's out with Marty Stewart.
Sure.
And couldn't do it the day. I was trying to get someone who could come in the same day as Stewart.
Yeah.
And then some other guy had a family problem, and Tim turned me on to Steve, and he was great. And I was so glad, you know, things like electric guitar and bass and steel, because they're going direct, you can do in the control room, which was great because I'd never really been around a good steel guitar player before. And I was convinced, and I remain convinced after sitting next to him, that you have to have three brains to play the pedal steel. there is so much going on. You got both feet doing different things, and you're using your knees.
Yes, exactly, and the knee levers.
I think it's a satanically created instrument.
It's the lizard brain. Yeah.
And you have to have a mind for math because there's a lot of math going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In the form of letters, there's math going on.
Right.
And so what instruments were you two playing?
I played, Tom was the guest singer. Okay. On the album. And I played guitar. On this album, I think I just played guitar and banjo.
Okay. And what banjo were you using?
I was using a banjo made by the Ohm Banjo Company. It's actually the prototype of their Minstrel line.
Okay.
With a short scale and a big head, so that the bridge is like in the middle of the head, the 12-inch head, and sure. So it's got a short scale and it sounds beautifully funky.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the guitar?
The guitar is a Huss and Dalton.
Oh yeah, very good.
I use two different Huss and Dalton. For the basics, I used a dreadnought, and then for some of the later stuff, I have a. It's right over here. It's an OM.
Uh huh. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So Tom, you didn't play guitar on the album?
No, they didn't let me.
What is your guitar of choice though? And you know when you're
I'm playing a Martin M38.
M38. Wow.
Yeah, well, Utah Phillips said the M38, that without them, we never would have got off the beaches. it's an OM shape.
Uh-huh.
And gorgeous sound, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And what year is it, do you know?
Yes, I got it in 78.
Okay. Yeah, so it's had a lot of time to breathe and open up.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And the Huss and Daltons, what are they, recent models or are they older?
No, they're back in the days before they moved to Stanton.
Okay.
When you know, it's interesting. I would go around. One of the great things about my work is that I get to visit all the cool guitar shops.
Sure.
And there's the room where all the high-end guitars and the vintage guitars are, and it always says ask for assistance.
Sure.
And I don't have to ask for assistance. Yeah. And yeah. I would go in there. They just sort of turn me loose. And this was many years, probably 30 years ago. I'd run across these Huss and Daltons, and I didn't know who they were, but they were always the greenest guitars in the shop. Uh-huh. And for my taste, because it's so subjective, they were always the best.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I finally said, who are these guys? And I looked inside, and they were, at that point, they were in Stewart's Draft, Virginia. And I was living in Charlottesville. I said, God, this is 20 minutes from my house. So I went over there, and I'll show you the guitar. And I designed it. I mean, they said, pick the wood. What do you want? So I wanted a cutaway because I was actually playing up there.
Sure.
And I wanted a sort of a concert size.
Yeah.
And then they let me pick up some sapele.
Wow.
What kind of wood is that?
Sapele. It's an African mahogany.
Okay.
And it's almost acoustically dead when you get it on stage. So I've never had feedback from my guitar.
Wow.
I don't have to put the, you know, the sound hole cover and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I said, you know, I've never had a slot head guitar.
Yeah.
And so they made me this guitar, and I went and picked it up, and it's still the best guitar I've ever played.
Right on.
Again, for my subjective taste.
Sure.
And except the first time I broke a string on stage, I discovered why most people don't have slot head guitar. Yeah. So I went back to them and I said, did you know about this? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me? And they said, because then you wouldn't be back here today asking us to build you an exact copy without a slot head. I said, you bastards. And the dreadnought of theirs, I never intended to get. They were in the process of building me this first guitar.
Uh-huh.
And there was a shop in Charlottesville called Charlottesville Drum and Guitar.
Uh-huh.
And I would go in there because they were, you know, I'd go into all the music stores. It's a 35,000 population, you know. I would go in there, and they'd let me just play around and whatever I wanted. And they called me one day. They said, we're going out of business. And whenever you come in, you play this dreadnought Huss and Dalton, and we know you like it.
Uh-huh.
So we are willing to sell it to you at cost because it'll save us a 15% restocking fee.
Oh, right on.
And so I said, well, can I take it home and play it for like a day? And I had my teenage son sit in front of me, and I was playing an old early 70s Martin D35.
Okay.
And I said, I'm going to A-B this guitar and tell me what you think about it. And after one back and forth, he said, you know, you look like you're really working to play the Martin, and it sounds like there's a towel over it.
Oh, my God.
He said, the Huss and Dalton is... It looks like it's way easier for it to play, and it is so alive. Sell the Martin. And that's how I ended up with three Huss and Dalton guitars.
Right on.
There's nothing pretty about guitar lust.
Oh, no. I mean, no. Every day I receive instrument porn from elderly instruments.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Stan Webern showed up at one of my shows when I played in East Lansing not long ago, and I said, you're the bastard that sends me that every day. He says, I don't even own the company anymore.
when the boys were with me out in East Lansing, and we went in elderly instruments and hung out for a while, and John Vesner, I found him over in the corner. He had an acoustic guitar, acoustic electric. What do you call them now?
Acoustic
electric. It's made to go.
Yeah.
It's an acoustic guitar made to go through a system.
Sure.
And he wound up buying it. When he got back down to Nashville, he bought it. It's never out of his hands. I mean,
it's not the carbon fiber one, is it?
No, it's not. Huh. I can't remember the name. It's a Spanish name. It may even be made in Spain.
Huh.
But it's a beautiful guitar.
Yeah, right on.
It's only about $1,200-$1,300.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, Tom, I read that you've retired from touring. at the young age. Yeah, of
88. I had to. I mean, I'm got tired of going to ERs and riding in ambulances and stuff. I had a series of seizures.
Okay.
The first one in Madison, then I wound up in finishing a show with them in Estes Park, Colorado, and we were doing Ramblin' Boy, which was our usual final song of the regular show, and something was wrong. I was singing along and doing the chorus, and I looked down, and my right hand was not moving.
Oh, my God.
I was not playing my guitar. So I wound up that night in the hospital in Denver. I had previously been in a couple others, and these were not painful. Yeah. These seizures were not painful, but they were not good.
No,
and
never.
So for not the first time, my elder daughter Jennifer flew out to Denver and brought me home. Kate had done the same thing on another occasion.
Uh-huh.
And the girl said, "Dad, you're retired. You know, we're tired of going to get you."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were right. You know, I had 64 years on the road.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's my fair share, I should
say.
Sure. And so do I miss it? Of course.
Yeah.
I'm like the old firehouse horse.
Yeah.
You know, the bell goes and I've been performing for so long. I love performing. I love the to and fro, back and forth with the audience. And I love everything about it except the travel.
Sure, I can understand.
And the travel, as anyone can tell you, is worse and worse and worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm too old for that.
Sure.
So my compensation is I'm writing a lot of songs.
Oh, very good. Excellent.
John and I write together and I write with Tim O'Brien,
yep,
and Kathy Fink, and I'm having a great time writing some good songs. And John and I are we're like that. It's we finish each other's sentences. It's and I was just talking. We were talking a little earlier about how it's. We could be brothers or something. We sing, especially when we sing something in harmony.
Uh huh.
You can't tell which of us is singing what, and that's magical and very very satisfying to hear singing the chorus of a song from the first album about the campfire.
Yeah.
The first playback I heard of us singing that chorus, I said, "My God, that's what I'm here for."
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Well, and it's the surprises that make this so much fun.
Oh yeah, sure.
You know, I think that we've both been doing it long enough that it's not terribly hard work.
Yep.
We write a lot alike. We let the songs progress. We're not sitting there with a whip saying, "No, you will do this." Because sometimes, I find us particularly accepting of one another's suggestions that we try something a little different.
Uh-huh.
But more than once it's been, "Well, how about if this happened?"
Yeah.
And you go, "What? Okay, sure." You know, we could we can write the song I was thinking of next Monday.
A lot of times, you know, that we talk, or we never talk, but many songwriters talk about second verse hell. If you get a verse and the chorus and everything, and then it's now what, which is where I have the most fun. I love to take the javelin and throw it as far out over the canyon as I can, and then see if I can get us back to the chorus. And by God, I can. And we can. It's, I don't know of anything that's that much fun that isn't illegal.
And these days, it's, there you are Monday at 2, and you think, wow, in an hour's time, we're going to have a new song. And that doesn't happen with everybody.
No, certainly not.
But just knowing that, you know, this is the closest thing that two guys can do together. That's like giving birth. You know, it's like, wow, that was, and especially when it ends up being a beautiful child.
Yes.
No, it doesn't look like either of us then.
it is magical. When you get down to it, it is magical. I mean, 20 minutes ago, there was not a song, and now there is.
Yeah.
And it's forever.
Yep.
Yeah.
And John, I see you're going to be doing some tour dates here, including over by me here in Northern California. Are you going to be playing any of these songs?
I mean, I'm no marketing genius, but I know what the latest album is. Well, and also I'm selling the album for two people.
Exactly. And are these solo dates or are these dates with a band?
No. I do all my dates solo.
Okay, all of them.
I've had a band that I put together for special occasions. There was an album that I did called Mightier Than the Sword, and I had so much fun with this band that I put together, and they were just such stellar players. I said, let's do like a long weekend.
Sure.
But you know, I'm a union guy, so I pay my side people really well. And some of them have toured with pretty big names, and they say, wow, you pay me better than so-and-so. And I thought, well, shame on them.
Yeah.
Because you're worth it.
Oh yeah.
So I, you know, they were vanity dates for me. I didn't make anything, but I got to play with some friends and play some new music and lean back into the big noise.
You're at the holidays right now. Do you guys have any traditions? Like, I'm sure you won't be together, but do you guys have traditions that you do in your families, Tom?
Yes. For the last, I'm sure, dozen years. I take my family to a ski resort in Virginia.
Okay.
In the Blue Ridge, and we rent a house for a week from New Year's Day, from Christmas to New Year's Day.
Right on.
And just veg, and they have skiing there. I haven't skied in a very long time, but my grandsons go, you know, zipping down the black diamond things on, you know, one ski, and that, you know, that.
Yeah, very cool. How about you, John?
Well, I married into a big fat Cuban family.
Okay.
So we have Noche Buena, which is on on Christmas Eve, and we also. You know, it's all about family. So we have the big house that everybody comes back to. The kids and grands come, and that's great fun. But not incidentally, Tom and I also have a tradition of writing sort of alternative Christmas songs.
Okay.
And there has been one on each of these albums on Together.
I was going to ask you about that.
Christmas in the Desert. Uh-huh. And on this
Christmas
one.
Christmas in the Desert is one of my personal favorites that we've written.
Yeah, and I've sung that a lot in concert. And on this album, it's Sergeant O'Reilly.
Yeah, exactly.
I was gonna
ask. And we have others as well. And I've written Christmas themed songs with other writers. I read a story. I don't know if I ever told you, Tom. Back in 1929 in Nogales, Arizona, which is a border town.
Sure.
The main street is the U.S.-Mexican border. They were going to have a big Christmas party, and the Christmas party happened to be held on the courthouse square, which was on the American side. And they said, half our town is on the wrong side of Christmas. And I heard that line, and I went, holy cow, there's the title for a song. And so for that night, everybody convinced the border guards to move the border in such a way that all the children from Nogales, Mexico could join in with the rest of the town, because every other day, you know, they were walking across the street.
Yeah. Sure.
And so it seemed like a particularly important idea to put into a song. Sure. in this day and age. So, yeah, I mean, so we'll probably, hey, Monday, let's write our Christmas song. Oh, wait a minute. We've got a surprise, surprise, surprise to rewrite. We'll do both.
Yeah, sure.
And how about childhood Christmas memories? Do you have any childhood Christmas memories?
Nah. Just family Christmas. Sure. Nothing noteworthy. Or
how about you, John?
Well, I was part of a huge. I was the eldest of nine.
Wow!
And I will never forget in 1965, I think it was. My parents giddily announcing that we were going to have the best Christmas present ever, because we were going to have a new little baby in July. And I was the eldest, and I was about 13 at the time of the announcement.
Uh-huh.
I was the only one in the family who knew how babies happened.
Uh-huh.
And I was horrified. Thinking, my mother would never do that. And when did she find the time? My dad would do that, but with my mother. But that was that. Yeah, we were all always, well, we didn't have any place to go. Who would take 11 people? So, yeah, it was a lot of, you know, getting up early and just chaos.
Sure. Going back to your current family, is there a Cuban dish like it that you eat on Christmas Eve? Like, is there,
Yeah. The lechon. It's the pork leg.
Uh-huh.
A raw ham.
Okay.
That is, you slit it all over and you put cloves of garlic in.
Sure.
Because a lot of people mistake Cuban cuisine for like Mexican cuisine. It's not spicy. It's more Mediterranean. There's a lot of garlic and cumin and olive oil. So the lechon is the centerpiece, but there's yuca. There's fried yuca. There's regular yuca with mole and... what's that?
What is yuca?
Yuca is a starchy underground root vegetable.
Okay.
And you can fry it. You can cut it up and fry it like French fries.
Sure.
Or you mix it. You just boil it, and it's the signature. And of course, flan.
Okay.
And my wife happens to make the best flan in the world. I proudly say this to all your listeners. And it's all Cuban food. It's all Cuban food.
Right,
it's great.
Very good. You know, it's been wonderful talking to both of you. I'm gonna let you guys go, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. And John, I hope I get the opportunity to meet you when you're over the hill in Sonoma here.
Do come. It's going to be an afternoon show. It's going to be the early bird special.
Okay. It's been wonderful meeting you, Tom, as well. And
thank you.
Yeah, I hope I get an opportunity to meet you in person as well. Maybe when I get out.
It's got to happen. Here. It's in the stars.
Okay, good. Yeah. I'm glad to hear it. Well, nice to see you guys. Thank you very much for your time.
See you Monday, John.
Okay. See you tomorrow.
That's right.
Yes. Okay.
Goodbye, guys. Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com, and I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend, and I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.